money. I have a problem this morning. I have a very serious problem. I am deeply disturbed and I'm troubled. And in the mildest way that I can share, that I can share what's troubling with you, I'm going to say it, though I had all sorts of reservations about it, but I feel that I have no choice but to speak out. And this most probably will be the beginning of, I don't know where it'll go, but I'm going to share it with you. Last week's year, there was a section of an article in English that we studied, and we found out about Avram, who left a confused legacy to his children, a Yitzchak who was obsessed with Be'er L'chai Ro'i, and who felt that his father really preferred Ishmael over him, and that the Akedah was an attempt to remove him from the scene. I mean, I don't even know how I'm saying all of this. It's not merely nonsense. It is an assault on the sanctity of Torah. Now, if the writer wants to talk this way about his grandparents, okay. But they're my grandparents and our grandparents too. Yaakov is a thief. Yaakov has serious problems. This is not Torah. It is not Torah. It's a totally unacceptable approach. It is sheker of the highest order. But this fellow who aggravated me last week struck again. Jerusalem Post of this past Friday. I'll just read a few, I don't know what to call classic or ugly pieces that are simply just not true. Not true. Oh, yes, after more than two decades away from home, Jacob has finally extricated himself from Laban and the comfortable materialistic exile which his uncle created for him. Comfortable materialistic exile? Avram's great speech, 20 years I worked for you. During the day I was burned by the sun, at night I froze. What a comfortable materialistic exile. Right? One who writes wants to know why it took Yaakov so long to get home. It was about 2 years lost over there. So amongst the things he says is the following. Jacob asked God to return him to his father's house in peace. Make it home from the house of Laban in peace. His early years were certainly not peaceful. The relationship with his twin brother Esau was tense, as was his relationship with his father, because he felt unappreciated, unloved, and guilty as a result of his deceptive masquerade to steal the birthright. You know what this is? It's not only sheker, it's fiction. It's fiction. How does he know that Yaakov felt unloved? What is it? That he felt guilty? What kind of deceptive masquerade? We learned it. We didn't learn that. Most significantly, he writes, Jacob was not at peace with himself and his God. How does he know it? How does he know? Where does it say any place that Jacob is not at peace with his God? He made it up. Now, if this would appear in the Jerusalem Post, One page later, where they have reviews of fiction novels, we find. But for some strange reason, they took this fiction and put it on the Parsha Vorkadish. It's a desecration of Torah. We haven't even, they haven't got to the best parts yet.
Why read it if it's...
What?
Excuse me, but why read it? We'd like to hear what you have to say, not what he has to say.
But you're going to have to understand how bad this is so that you can appreciate what's going to come after. You have to know, I'm sorry. You have to know that there's absolute nonsense. And by the way, I'm not talking about stuff that's written by conservative or reform rabbis. And this is not Beryl Wine. He's great. He's terrific. Now, more significantly, Jacob was not at peace with himself and his God. Yes, Abraham had also been an aggressive fighter who came from behind to defeat four terrorist kings. And yes, the heir to the Abrahamic birthright, we heard about that last week. We have to act courageously and even militantly to see to it that compassion, righteousness, and just morality dominate the world order. But that's not it. Here it comes. But even though Esau had sold him the birthright for a bowl of lentil soup, hadn't Jacob taken unfair advantage of his brother's hunger? Sheker! We learned the psukim. He gave him to eat immediately. He did not take unfair advantage of his brother's hunger. And then he goes on to say, would not compassionate righteousness have suggested that he give him the soup? Just one moment. Give him the soup. Just one moment. I just want to read one sentence from Ancient Fuller. I found it. He says, I have to tell you, he says exactly what I said in Shir 2 weeks ago. The Yaakov Natan, Yaakov had given, of course, from Samson for her, he says, of course he gave him to eat immediately. His brother was hungry. To create a story that, remember how I described it? Here. You think this is what happened? Esau, you're hungry? Dinah hungry? Here, take a whiff of this. No. Sell me the birthright. Okay, you want it? No, you can't have it. You remember the rest of the description? We have to have it in quadruplicate, and we have to... you don't have your chotemet? You left your chotemet in the field? You're going to have to go back for a chotemet. You know, anything without a chotemet. It's all a lie. It never happened that way. I should have given him the soup. I give him the soup.
Wow.
Just take it easy. Go find with all of this stuff that I have over here. All this stuff, where will I find Samson Raphael first? All right, I believe me, I got it here somewhere. It's probably the closest thing. It's right here. That's where it is. The Yaakov Natan. Not Vayitain Yaakov. I'm reading about Samson Raphael first. He had already given to him, it to him, at once. He gave him the soup at once. He did not take advantage of his hunger to force him to sell. There's no question about it that that's the shot. Anything else is simply taking Torah and perverting it. Also, and this may be important for later on in this year, the real meaning of machar, vayimkor, we always translated that he sold his birthright, is not necessarily to sell, but also has the meaning of relinquishing, giving over, abandoning. The word machar doesn't have to mean sale. The assumption from Hirsch is saying it's possible there was no sale that took place over here. He simply abandoned it. He didn't want anything to do with the birthright. But Tzav HaKabbalah is going to say that with regard to the word mochar that is used in this week's Sedra by the sale of Yosef. They didn't sell him. He has Zoe. They sold him for 20 pieces of silver. There's a medrash like that. What are you talking about? Divide 20 pieces of silver amongst 11 brothers. We're talking about people that were very wealthy. They sold Yosef. They needed. They may have abandoned him. They may have abandoned him. They may have had their reasons for abandoning. There wasn't necessarily a sale. But we'll get to that. But here, there's one more selection over here that is pure fiction. Except that Hemingway would have written better fiction.
Oh.
But Jacob must repent before he returns to his father. He must go to Seir, where he returns the blessing to Esau. He didn't go to Seir. He told in this week's he tells Vayishlach, he says, "You go home. I'll meet you later." And Rashi explains, when is the later that they're going to meet? Esau, Yaakov will never go to Seir, to the land of Edom. You know where they're going to meet? When V'ol Moshim B'har Tzion L'shvotet Har Esau, when Esau is going to be judged at the end of the day by God himself on the Temple Mount. V'ol Moshim B'har Tzion L'shvotet Et Har Esau V'haytal Hashem Olofa. He never went to say it. It's fiction. It's just plain fiction. Now, I don't know how many thousands of people read this. I don't know how many thousands of people see this as Torah, especially since it's Rabbi Shlomo Rizkin who's writing it. There I said it. I think you have to understand that this is not Torah. He can't, he can conceivably undo 30 years of studying Torah with one article like this that will create all sorts of doubts in the minds of people. Because he wrote it. I feel that my Torah teaching is endangered by what he writes. I have to stand up for it. Sorry. I'm sorry. I can't commit something of this sort. I don't know. I'm not sure yet what steps I'm going to take.
Write an article.
No. No, I'm taking it under advisement together with other rabbis. All that will happen with an article is, okay, so Gold wrote an article, and Rizkin wrote an article, and Rizkin will write another article, and Gold will write another article. And then you know what I ended up doing? I've given him legitimacy. There's Gold's chart in Torah, and there's Rizkin's chart in Torah, and they're equal. Oh no, maybe even Rizkin sounds a little better. I can't do that. I can't do that. Man has to be censured in some way. This is serious stuff. This is painful stuff. I've never spoken about a colleague like this in my life. And I never spoke like this. But over here, Torah is in danger. Hasn't that been my whole life to make sure that Torah should not be endangered? My whole life has been to teach honest, real Torah to the very best of my ability. And here it could all go down the drain. I'm concerned what's going to come in this, in next week. Who knows what he's going to do? The sale of Yosef? He'll have a field day with his fiction. And it's a bizarre, it's a shame. It's an ugly shack. Okay. I don't feel any better than I did at the beginning. Now we'll go to the Shia. Yes, and I'll tell you, the Shia again is going to be based on the Ksav HaKapolim's approach to Mechidat Yosef. It's just unique. It's a breath of fresh air to be able to take a look at the same psukim we've been reading for our whole lives, and he sees something so fascinating. The beauty of it. And you know what the beauty of it is also? He's looking for one thing: to make the tribes, the children of Yaakov, look better than they would from the text. While others only want to find dirt, filth. Avram with his confused legacy, Yitzchak is obsessed with Be'er Achayroi, Yaakov has a guilty conscience, he feels unloved and unwanted. Every sickness you can think of, he writes about Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. I stand up for Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. We pray at their graves because they're obsessed, because they're sick. All right, I'm getting over it. Listen, I'm also entitled to get upset. Vayeshev. Number one. Yosef had been sent by his father to find out how his brothers are doing, and he was wandering in the field, and a man asked him, "Matvakesh, what do you seek?" If you haven't heard this, you know, you don't miss something. There's a new disc from Mordechai Ben David, and the text of one of the great songs on that disc is the next pasuk. Vayomer, Yosef tells this mystery man, "Et achai anochi mevakesh, et achai anochi mevakesh." Okay. I'm not going to do justice to Mordechai Ben David, but it's a beautiful, beautiful song. Mm-hmm. I seek my brothers. But we have to remember this pasuk, because this pasuk is going to be important throughout the rest of Sefer Bereishis. Yosef is looking for a reconciliation with his brothers. I'm looking for my brothers. Hagidon only, Eifohem Rohi. And I don't think it'll be on the hit parade, but it's such a beautiful song. A fohem roim et achai anochi yavakesh. Vayomerish, and the man said, they journeyed from here because I heard them saying that they're going to Dotan. Vayelach Yosef went after his brother and he found them in Dotan. Vayiru, here begins the story. Yes? You didn't like the way I sang?
No. What about the significance of the anochi?
What? No, I can't go into that. Maybe I will. You know how I read it? Et achai anochi mevakesh. I'm the only one in the world who seeks my brothers. Nobody else in this world is going to love them. There is a unity of Klal Yisrael to the exclusion of all others. There isn't going to be another person on the face of this earth throughout history who is going to seek the well-being of my brothers. Me. I seek them. How do you like that for instant shot? But it's emes. It's not fiction. Vayiru al tamei lechauk, they saw him from afar. Uveterem yikrav eleim, and before he grew close, before he arrived close to him, vayitnaklu oto lahamiko. These three words. Here's where it all starts. Our English translation says vayitnaklu oto lahamiko. They conspired toward him to kill him. What happens if we can take a close look at these three words, Vayitnaklu oto lahamito? That's exactly what we're going to do. Let's begin with the Rashi. Down at the Rashi. Pasuk, it says, we have Pasuk 17, then 18. Vayitnaklu. And they conspired. This means, Rashi says, Vayitnaklu. Nitmal'u l'cholin. They filled themselves with conspiracies, va'armimuyot, and cunning. They filled themselves with conspiracies and cunning. Okay? Not bad. Oto. The word that comes after vayitnaklu. Oto. Toward him. Kamo, as though it would have said, Ito. The word oto should be seen as if it were vowelized, ito, which means emo, with him. Klomer, as if to say, a love, towards him. It means Rashi is taking us on a little journey with this word oto, vayitnaklu oto. Oto should be read as though it said ito, and ito means emo, with him. And emo, we're going to have to say, means a love toward him. Okay. Now, take a look at that three. Right to the left of the Rashi. I know I should have made it much larger. I should have enlarged it, but all right. I was too upset this week, so. Vayitnaklu. Yeah. Very important. Now, don't get yourselves unnerved over here. We're going to do a little bit of the Hebrew and English grammar, and I know you're up to it. The question is, will I be able to do good enough a job? But I think I will. All right? This comes, by the way, the art scroll, Chumash, with English translation of Rashi, that's written by a fellow, Isser Herzog. He lives on HaKablam in Hanof, about a block away from me. Been living there for 10 years. And I only met him a few months ago for the first time. I've always been telling myself, I want to go over to his house, I'm knocking his door, and tell him, Habibi, you did a masterful job of translating Rashi and all the Chumash. It's really something. It's really, really a great, great translation. And it's more than a translation, it's an explanation of the Rashi. And it's good. It comes in five volumes. Vayitnaklu, which means, and they filled themselves with conspiracies, as Rashi has explained. That word vayitnaklu is a reflexive verb in the Hispael, which does not take a direct object, ito or oto, however, generally means the direct object, him. All right? Let me explain. Vayitnaklu is from the Hitpael. The Hitpael in Hebrew is, I did something to myself. If we're talking about something that I did to myself, for example, Hitrachatzti, I washed myself. Hitlabesh, I got dressed. Hitgalachti, I shaved. Hit means something I did to me. This is the reflexive. Now, there's one thing for sure about the reflexive. It's an intransitive verb. It's not something that happens to somebody. If I wash myself, that's it. There's nobody else involved over here. Now, which raises a serious question. What word can follow Vayitnaklu? What word can follow? They filled themselves with conspiracies. If we would want to translate it, a direct translation, Vayitnaklu oto, they filled themselves with conspiracies, him. Him. Does that make any sense in the world? Not a chance.
Not a chance. So what's this Oto doing here? Let's continue here. Rashi explains that in this instance, Oto is the equivalent of the related word Ito, which generally means with him. In context, within this pasuk, it takes the meaning of another preposition toward him. Now that means Rashi had to, by the way, it's not only Rashi, it's many of them, of course, have to take a number of steps over here in order to get this word Oto to fit into this pasuk. A simple reading of the pasuk by somebody who knows basic Hebrew grammar leaves us with two words that just don't connect. They don't get it. It just doesn't work. That's the introduction. Number 4, backside of the first page. You're going to see a chiddush here that's going to excite you. I hope it will. It should. It has excited me every time I learn it. Don't get that. We'll skip a little bit. Ksava kabbalah bagit naklu otol hamitol. Dat hamifarshim. The opinion of the Meforshim, and he means Rashi and many others. Bagit naklu, and he's quoting Rashi. Nitmalu necholim v'armumit. They became full of, what were the translation of that? Those words are very important. Nechalim, conspiracies, he translates it into English, and armumiyot, and cunning. Ki tirgum lehargo b'yarmo lemiktalei b'nechilu. You know, we have to know what the meaning vayitnaklu is. So he brings one place where we can see the meaning of vayitnaklu. In Pasuk Shpatim, it says, when a man will arise intentionally against his fellow man to kill him, the orma, important word. Man rises up against another man in order to kill him, the orma, cunning, trickery. The Targum says, l'miktele b'nechilu, to kill him b'nechilu. In other words, what he's bringing to this pasuk is vayitnaklu is a bad, bad word, because it means to use cunning against somebody. Vinyano, and what does hitnaklu mean? Hamachshava hara'a tzifuna b'lev, an evil thought that is hidden in one's heart. And whatever one does as a result of that thought that lurks in the minds of men, whatever he does is going to be bu'arma, is going to be something that he's going to do through cunning or trickery. Umilat oto lo pershu kechol oto shebimikra. The word after vayitnaklu, the word oto, is translated here differently than any other oto in all of Tanakh. They have to take the oto and make it ito, and then they make it imo, and then they say, Rashi says it means a love to him, that they were filled with cunningness in themselves toward him. But that's not really what oto means. Watch. Lo Persha did not explain it, the Kichol Oto Shev Mikra, like every Oto in Tanakh, Hamorea Al HaPa'ul, that is talking about the person who's being acted upon. Ki Po'al Hitnaklu, because the verb Hitnaklu, by Hitnaklu, Omeidu, it's an intransitive verb. It doesn't go outward. Hitpael is always an immovable, intransitive verb. It doesn't act on anything or anybody else. It's all within me. Lachein omru, therefore they said, ki melat oto po, hu b'makom elav, the word oto over here is in place of the word elav to him. Ayin Rashi, take a look at Rashi and the other Mefarshim, Vahadochet Mevu'ar. It's clear that there's something difficult about this pshat. Milvadzeh Lepeirusham, according to the way Rashi learns, Hamamar Lemotar. We don't need the words Vayitnaklo Tola Hamito, because according to Rashi, they're planning to kill him. Now this is unnecessary. Very soon the pasuk is going to say that the brothers say to one another, "Lechu v'nahargeu, let's go and kill him." If the pasuk is, if they're going to say openly, "Let's go and kill him," why did the pasuk have to introduce it with "they plan to kill him," which only leaves us with their inner thoughts, but they're saying it out of their mouths. Let's go kill him. What do I need a pasuk to tell me? Vayitnaklu, they planned with cunning to kill him. Watch. Why does the pasuk have to tell us their evil thought? Halo hodionu dava devarsiv sotayim. They let us know by the words of their lips, shehotziu bepeim olay, that they said with a full mouth, lechu v'nahargeu, let's go and kill him. What does the pasuk have to tell me in advance what their intentions were? Umachshavtam nikeret. What they're thinking can easily be seen from what they say from their mouths. What they say out of their mouths is much worse than the thought. Why do you have to tell us what the thought is? Who needs it? They say openly, let's kill him. There it is. He's coming to his the point that he's going to make, and on the basis of this point he's going to learn the whole parasha. It seems to me, these words, this tells us, amitus kavanas ha'achim, the true intent of the brothers, that will explain what they said and what they did with their brother Yosef. Everything that they said to him, it was all, I'm going to use the word fiction again, it was all imaginary. He says, you know what the brothers intended to do? They wanted to frighten him. They never ever intended to lift a hand against their brother Yosef. They wanted to get across to him the point that he has caused them a great deal of pain. See what it's like. Look what it's like. You have made us look terrible to our father. You've created a tension in our relationship. We'll scare the wits out of you and see how you like it. We never ever intended to kill. Is that a novel approach? I think it's a novel approach. They never intended. And he's going to explain the whole parsha on the basis of this. And therefore, according to what he's saying, Vayitnaklu Oto means, yeah, the Torah is telling us what was going on deep in their minds, that this is all a cunning trick. They're not out to kill him. Couldn't he lift a finger against a brother? Spill blood? Watch. He's going to deepen this considerably. Yes?
Well, they seem to have fooled Reuben because Reuben thinks they're going to kill him.
Because he wasn't there.
Oh, no. He said at first, why kill our brother?
No. Let me take you through this step by step. We're going to have to go through step by step. He explains any question that you ask. But first, let's get this down straight. Yeah. We're also going to have we're going to have to explain Yehuda, who says, "Ma betzaki naharoget achinu v'chisinu adamo," and the usual translation is, "What benefit, what profit will we have if we kill our brother and cover his blood?" Ksava Kavola is going to have a completely different translation for the whole thing. I'm just afraid that we're not going to get it all done today. But it's worthwhile to go step by step. It's novel. It's refreshing. And you can see the proofs that he brings to his shita, and they are wonderful. Wonderful. By the way, nobody is saying that that's a nice thing to do to a brother, but it's light years away from saying that they want to kill him. You don't frighten a brother with something of that sort either. I don't like your jokes. But it's a big, big distance from saying that they push it, cold-blooded killers who want to do their brother in. Boy. Watch. Shaloha yukim diburim, we're coming to line 20. Diburim, they were words, upalim medumiyim, acts that were imaginary. To the eyes of Yosef, they saying things to him to leave him with the impression that they want to kill him and remove him from the world. Their intention was only to frighten him and to scare him. Hitnaklut and arma, that's what we started with. Arma. Where's my notebook? There it is. I leave my notebook at home, but I think I will reconstruct it. All I did was I let my fingers do the walking through the thesaurus. There are 4 or 5 words that appear together in a number of places of the source. Cunning, trickery, device, strategy. The word orma in Tanakh can be negative and it can be very positive. The same word. And to help you out, take a look at number 6. All right, on this page. Mishlei Shlomo ben David, Melech Yisrael. These are the proverbs of Shlomo, the son of David. Lodat Chochma Umusa, he wants to teach people. Make known words of wisdom and discipline. Lahavi Nimrei Bina, and to make words of understanding discernible. Watch. Kachat Musar Haskel, that people should learn discipline, righteousness, justice, and fairness. The next pasuk, Latet Liptaim Orma. The purpose of Sefer Mishlei is to provide simpletons with Orma, cleverness. That's the exact same word, Orma, that was used in Parshas Mishpatim with regard to murder. Ki yozid ish aleyeyu. But Orma, if a man is going to, I have that down in number 8a. Ki yozid ish aleyeyu lahargo ba'orma. We have the word Orma in Mishpatim. We have it in Mishlei. In Mishpatim, the word they translated as to scheme against his fellow. In Mishlei, it's called cleverness. How do you like that? The same word. The same word can be very positive. This is something that Shlomo HaMelech is writing a whole sefer to give simpletons orma, cleverness. Then you can go next a little further and turn cleverness into cunning into guile into give me a bad word.
Trickery.
The Nachash was Arum, Mikol. There, it's a fascinating one, because there he has cleverness that can be used for good or for bad. The word Orma, which is the meaning of the word vayitnaklu, could be positive or it could be negative. And he had the exact same words. One in Mishle and one in Mishpat. Watch where it's going to take us. Let's go back to our Ksava Kabbalah. Ki inyan echad lehitnaklutu la'arma. Line 23. Hitnaklut and arma. Same word. Ha'arma. He is statrut v'talmut ha'machshava v'apula mizolato. Arma means that I am concealing my thoughts from somebody else. V'chein hu hitnaklut. That's what hitnaklut is. My real intentions are concealed. That's what hitnaklut means. Shehu meshutov b'muvano im shein kli. You know where the word hitnaklut comes from? He's brilliant. His etymology. Hitnaklut comes from the word keli, a vessel. When you put something into a vessel, into a pot, a tub, covered, you don't know what's going on in there. It's concealed. Hitnaklut is thoughts going on in my mind that are like a keli, it's locked. You don't know what's going on over there. That's hitnaklut, and that's arma. So he says, that's a kelisha who had kev chitzoni, something that's surrounded on the outside, hamastir, that conceals, v'hamechasen, that covers, b'chalalo, in the body of the keli, u'betnimiyoto, and within it, dvarma, something. Now he says, v'yesh losha minei arma unechilut. There are three kinds of arma. We'd have to use all the English words to put together. But there are three kinds, and he's going to explain each one of them. The three kinds are the following. Ha'echad, the first one, is gnai be'emet, something that's absolutely shameful. Kishyeh tachlis bakoshas ha'orma la'ora elazulat. When the purpose of my orma, or hitnaklut, is in order to be, cause harm to somebody else, it's absolute evil. Kamo, the pasuk in Mishpatim, when a man rises up against another man, la'horgo, to kill him, Orma, bad. Habez, there's a second meaning to the word orma. Orma l'shvach. There is an orma that is praiseworthy. Same word, praiseworthy. When that is, when the purpose of the orma is lahastir ha'inyan kedei shelo yitnazek me'achedim. When I conceal something so I should not be hurt by anybody else. I have to learn how to be circumspect so that I can protect myself. That's the pasuk in Mishle. Latet l'ktayim arma. To give the fool, the simpleton, arma. So arma can be trickery. Arma can be cleverness. Arma can be seichel hayashar. Arma can also be absolute betrayal. Same word, two completely different meanings. Hagimel, there's a third meaning to the word arma. Arma mushutefet b'shevach u'gnai. There can be an arma where they come together. There's praise, it's something good, and it's something bad. V'hu. And that is what I see before me is shameful and bad, and what is concealed in the mind of the one who's doing it, who l'shvach, l'shevach. Boy, this shir can be a yeshir and a yeshiva for a few hours. I'm just going to try and tell you a major concept in Talmud that is not understood, that you're going to understand it right here. We're making a Talmidei Chachamim. There is a halacha of orma. There's a halacha that says you're allowed to do certain things, many things for that matter. Where on the outside it looks like, pulling shtick. Don't get me out of this shtick. But no, it's good. Yeah, I have two mishnayos that deal with it. classic example. Brought in the Sifra HaPoskim. Mechiras Chometz. There's an issue, you're not allowed to have Chometz, you're not allowed to own Chometz. So these smart Jews went ahead and they pulled a fierce one. You know what they did? They went ahead and they concocted a Mechiras Chometz. You sell the Chometz. It's in my house. I'll open up my closet, it's right there. But wait, I got away with it. The halacha is clear. You sold it, you sold it. It doesn't belong to you anymore. That is an urmo which is clever. And it is completely accepted in halacha. There are all sorts of... you're not allowed to be tovel, a keli that needs tefillah on Shabbos. Bought from a goy. I need to fill up water from the well. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to use this new keli. And I'm going to fill it up with water from the well. You know what happened as I filled it up with water? It was immersed into the waters of the mikveh. I pulled the first one. Mutter! Shulchan Aruch says, do it! I have over here in number 7 and 8 two Mishnayot. I could have given you half a Mishnayot here. Marim and Amaisa Sheni. You can use clever devices or strategies. The thesaurus said devices and strategies. Absolutely acceptable. And the halacha, it tells us, do it. When I redeem Meiser Sheni is that tenth that has to be brought to Yerushalayim. I live in Metula. I can't take all my Meiser Sheni and schlep it with me to Yerushalayim. So what does the Torah say? Go redeem it. Change it into money. Take the money to Yerushalayim and buy food here in Yerushalayim for you and your family during Yantif. Okay? Now, but there's a halacha in the Torah says that if I, the owner of the Meiser Sheni, I'm the one who's redeeming it and changing it into money, I have to add a fifth to the price. So there, take a look at number 7. Marim and Meiser Sheni, you can act cleverly with regard to Meiser Sheni. You don't have to pay the fifth. You know what? Give your adult children the money and let them redeem it. They don't own it. They don't have to pay a fifth. Get away scot free. Is this trickery? Is this cunning? The Mishnah says that's what you should do. You know why the Mishnah says you should do it? It comes from a pasuk. Because one gets great blessing for eating from Meiser Sheni in Yerushalayim. They wanted to make it easier for you. Shouldn't have to spend the extra fifth. Give your bar mitzvah boy, son, the money, tell him to redeem it. Looks like trickery? No. Doesn't it? You know who defines trickery? Cunning? The halacha defines it. And therefore it makes no difference what you may think about mechirat chametz. An act of acquisition was made, even if you know that the guy is going to sell it back to you. No difference. It's legitimate. Because there's an orma. And you see, what's fascinating is, that's why this word orma has, which is also the word vayitanaklu, has different meanings. It can mean something positive. It can mean something negative. It can be a joining of both the positive and the negative. Let's go to we'll have to say so saying in Vayitnaklu Oto, the outside is going to be bad, but the inside is, they're doing this as a ruse. They don't have any plan of killing their brother. Perish the thought! Therefore, we understand that the word Vayitnaklu means what it really should mean. there's something going on inside themselves. And otot to him, toward him, there's going to be lahamito. What are the three words? Vayitnaklu, otot lahamito. They're thinking about it all going on in their kishkes. For him, he's going to think that they want to kill him. That's the whole point of it all. They want to frighten him. They want to frighten him. They want him to know how they feel. He brings a lot of other places in Tanakh. A lot of other places. Now, let's go to the top of the next column. The end of the first line. V'amechuvan. V'amechuvan l'fizeh. The intent. The next column. Next column. Here. V'amechuvan l'fizeh b'mamar. V'yitnaklu otol amito. The meaning of that, those three words, you know what it is? They came against their brother with armor. To fool him, bedato. He should think something that isn't true. He should imagine to himself, from their words and what their deeds, that they want to kill him. Line number 74. This pasuk comes at the very beginning of the story. Those three words, "Vayitnaklu otol hamito," are the introduction to the entire story, to tell you that whatever is going to happen afterwards has to be understood within this context. And it is possible to explain every pasuk. But you should know immediately that this is a strategy. It's a strategy by which they want to deal with him. Otol hamito, he's going to think that they want to kill him. But that was never their intention. This pasuk comes at the beginning of the story, Lahodianu, line 75, to let us know, whatever is going to be told afterwards. Their words and their deeds in this matter, it was not what they meant in their heart, and it was not because they wanted to do evil. It was only talk, and acts that were fictional. La'inei Yosef, in the eyes of Yosef. V'gam im b'sif so sehem hotziu b'kol la'oznei Yosef, even if with their lips they let out a voice in the ears of Yosef, lishpo domo arza, that they're going to pour his blood on the earth. Libam lo kein dimo b'emet. Their hearts never had that in mind. Never, ever, ever. Their intention was to frighten him, and to bring down upon him that fear of death. Therefore, the pasuk does not say "vayitnaklu olav" upon him. Shin Cain, if they would have said that, if that's what the pasuk have said grammatically, it would have had to mean the arma hirushona, the first arma, which is toho kubaro, that what's in his heart is what's outside. And that would mean they want to kill him. Whatever way, they would have sick the dogs on him. So that in the eyes of everybody, they're going to be seen as innocent. They didn't do anything. Avol onan milat oto, it said the word oto. Ashe yore b'chol makom al ha-pa'ol. The word oto is always talking about the one who is being acted upon. Ki Yosef hoyo ha-pa'ol, the only one who's being acted on by this trickery strategy is Yosef kimavuar. V'kashe yovo l'fanenu v'biyorak su'mavuam is that, as we will explain in the psukim that are going to come. That is the approach of the Ksav HaKabbalah. Now, usually on Friday when I get the Jerusalem Post, so it's a toss-up. one of the two women. I'm either going to read Carolyn Glick first, or I'm going to read Sarah Honig. Understand? Those are the two best in the paper. I think that this Friday, at the Beis Hanochen, I'm going to go to the fiction parsha section first to see what's there. But you should know, Rabotai, it's not a joke. You have to approach Torah. You have to approach Torah with fear and trembling. You're dealing with God's divine words. And nobody has the right to read in all sorts of sheker and nonsense into it. Thank you very much. I needed you today.
Rabbi Goldman.
Yes.
I feel like